This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired October 2016.
Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And an exciting show this week. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Barry, and I got some very interesting topics today. I think we've all heard of this B&B company, whatever it's called, B&B, you stay Airbnb. But there are other companies out there that you should know about, and we have the CEO of a new company, at least new to me. It's called Homestay.com, and in a few minutes we'll talk with CEO Alan Clark. And then following that, we're going to go over and talk with the folks at Kiplinger Finance about the possibility of you getting a raise. What are the trends that are going to happen in 2017? We have Ann Keyes on our show today. She's going to talk about that and explain to us what the possibilities are. Ann Keyes Smith will be with us, editor at Kiplinger. But before we do all of that, let me ask the question I always do, and I want you to answer honestly. Are you financially fit? That's so important. That's what this is all about. Are you making more than you spend, or are you spending more than you make? And you know the dangers of that, and you know you can find out very simply. Are you borrowing money to make it through the week? Are you not able to get the things that you need to keep your household going? Chances are that you're not spending the way you should. And do you have 6 months of survival funds in your savings account? Add up all of your monthly expenses, mortgage, rent, utilities, food and drink, clothes, cleaning, fuel, transportation, everything. The monthly total, you must put that away for a six-month period. 6 months of that. Each add the totals up. And if something happens to your income, you know that you're good for at least 6 months to meet your financial obligations. This money must not be touched, folks. It's an emergency fund that's there for you. Okay, you've got to have it. Then you need 3 months. That's your survival fund. Then you need 3 months of a what we call an emergency fund here. This is for something that's going to happen, always does. I want you to put away 3 months and have that. That, too, you can invest and play with it, but you can't spend it, and you must always make sure you have the balance. Finally, are you saving at least 5% of everything you make? 5% of your weekly or monthly income every payday. Pay yourself first. Put aside 5% of that income. So important that you do that. And if you do that, then you can suggest that you are financially fit or at the very cusp of that, because then you can do other things and you'll feel like it and you'll feel better about your life. So make sure you do that. And you can take a vacation. So when you take a vacation, where do you stay? Well, customarily, for most of us, or over the past few years, we stay at a hotel generally. But that's not necessarily where millennials stay or those who are with it stay. They stay at places like Airbnb. Now, I've never done that. But all over the world you can do it. Or they may stay at a place called Homestay.com. With us on the phone from Dublin, Ireland, is the CEO of Homestay.com, Alan Clark. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
How long have you been in charge of this this company, and how old is it?
So I have been running Homestay for the last 3 years. Homestay was founded a little bit before that, not much, maybe 3.5-4 years ago. And we've been on a very exciting journey of growth and travel and shared experiences on a global basis ever since.
Now, is it safe to suggest that it is? I mean, many people on this side of the world, and I presume over there, they've heard of their vacation rental websites like Airbnb. Would it be safe to say that Homestay is like that? Is it the same kind of program?
Yeah, it's similar. I think the origins of Homestay come from education travel. So the education travel industry works in conjunction with homestay inventory and has done for decades. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it's what we see as different between Homestay and Airbnb is that 100% of our inventory is where the homeowner is present. So we don't have any empty apartments or empty spaces, as we call it,
okay,
on our platform.
Right.
Everything
right.
we do, it's a people-centric travel experience. With the homeowners there.
And may I say, because I do have some background in Ireland, one of my favorite places, Alan, is that this is nothing unusual to what has been taking place for many, many years in Ireland. I mean, people have come over and stayed in a home or stayed with somebody in their home. That's kind of a customary and not an unusual thing, right?
Correct. I think the bed and breakfast or B&B industry has been around as long as people have been traveling. I think what's new about the shared economy marketplaces or the alternative accommodation marketplaces which have been created is the accessibility, the transparency, and the volume of demand to both host and be hosted. You know, I think the internet platform has created a great medium by which travelers can stay with hosts and hosts can entertain travelers in their local city.
So there's a better ability to communicate than there has been in the past in terms of setting up this. Is that what you mean?
I think so. The advent of reviews, of video calling, video messaging, we live in a much more connected world than we did, even 15, 20 years ago. So I do think the ability to communicate has really enhanced the quality of the product.
Not only that, but I think you probably feel a lot more at ease if you can sit there and on FaceTime or whatever and actually look at the person that's coming to see you and vice versa. I mean, that's got to be a very kind of, helpful part of the whole program, right?
For sure. I mean, for us, we see an average stay length of 10 nights. I mean, it varies from 2 nights to 25 nights, depending on the type of customer. But what we know is that, what's most important is that the host and the guest get every opportunity to interact ahead of, a front door
meeting. Alan Clark is my guest. When we come back, we'll talk about the type of homestay guest that stays. This is Home and Family Finance. I'll be right back.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired October 2016.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is CEO Alan Clark of Homestay.com. He brings a decade of e-commerce management and experience for both listed and privately held technology companies. Prior to Homestay.com, he was head of games at online gaming company PaddyPower.com in Dublin. And he comes to us from Dublin today, and we're talking about his company, Homestay, that's been around for several years now. And it's not unlike Airbnb, but it's tremendous frequency of people trying to go from one place to the other, and instead of staying in a typical hotel, they stay in as a homestay guest. Now, what is a typical homestay guest? Who is it? Who is a typical person that you're entertaining?
Sure, I think one of the most interesting characteristics is that we've processed close to 1 million bed nights thus far, and 80% of our traveling guests are solo travelers. So we think that if you think about the local experience that you can get, if you travel with your friends, typically, the experiences you take are with your friends or family. But if you're traveling solo, I think the homestay option is a great way to stay because you enrich your experience through the people you stay with. So I think that's one interesting characteristic. I think another is, you mentioned at the top of your show, the millennial segment.
Yes.
What's super interesting is, the millennial segment is an important segment for us, but 50% of our leisure travel guests are outside the millennial segment because I think there's a macro trend in the travel space seeking experience-based travel. So it really touches a lot of demographics.
So baby boomers are as likely to be one of your guests as is a millennial. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for people who travel for leisure reasons, sure.
Yeah,
we have a large volume of people who travel for education reasons, and they're much more in the millennial segment. But I think the baby boomer segment, many have stayed in every type of accommodation from, a hotel to a hostel to a to, like, I've done a, you know, a tent in Mongolia, and, you know, a homestay is another option that's available to them. And I think for given types of trips, it appeals.
Are you in every city now, Alan? Where are you located most? What are your most popular cities?
So we're in 150 countries around the world, so we've kind of achieved global. In terms of city level, you know, we've got varying degrees of host coverage, but we're everywhere from San Francisco to New York to Havana, Paris to Tokyo,
wow,
to Sydney. So pretty much every country we touch, and most of the major cities in the countries we touch too.
Well, here's what caught my eye, Alan. It's in part of the press release I received. It said, have an empty bedroom that's collecting dust? Financially savvy folks can earn big bucks by renting out their rooms on a short-term basis on homestay.com. One sharp New Yorker has already earned more than $18,000 since January by doing just that. What's going on? How do you do that? I mean, how much does it cost me? You've got to be competitive with hotels and other companies, right?
Yeah, so the average price, hosts are free to set their own price. They look around the, you know, they can look online on Homestay and see what the prices are in their area. We make recommendations to them at the point at which they sign up. But the average price across the globe tends to be around 40 euros, so at this point $40 per night. It varies by city, so, you know, New York might be more expensive than you know, Cork here in Ireland, and London might be more expensive than a rural city in the UK.
Well,
that's about the average price point.
Okay, and if I'm interested, what do I do? Contact your website? How do I get to be a host?
Yeah, so if you go to homestay.com, there's a very clear link to sign up, and you go through the process, the seven-stage process of signing up to become a host. You create your profile, you add photographs, and, you know, we will review the profile here with our customer support team, and away you go.
Okay, when we come back, we'll find out why people are choosing to go your way as opposed to the old traditional hotel way, and some other things about Homestay, folks. Are you interested? I certainly am. This is Home and Family Finance. I'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired October 2016.
You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and the Radio America Network, our program sponsor, the Defense Credit Union Council, and CUNA, the Credit Union National Association, and we thank them for their continued support of the program. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, folks, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And you don't have to be in the military to save. 5% of every dime that you make all the time. Put it away. You'll be happy that you did. And you'll be able to take a vacation. And maybe when you do so, you can go and stay at one of these new places that, no, it's not so new to me, homestay.com, an accommodation marketplace dedicated to the homestay travel experience, where the host is present for every stay. All of their facilities have a host there. So you're actually coming to a place, staying in the home of the host and interacting with him. And Alan says to me, Alan Clark, who is the CEO, says, you know, you're learning and enjoying and having that relationship as well. I like the concept of it, and I guess, as I said, it's certainly not new. But what is this doing to the hotel industry, Alan?
I think it's adding additional options. I think if you look at the data, I mean, a lot of data has been created in the context of Airbnb existing. And really, it seems to be the case that additional inventory, and I'm using almost inhuman language, but, you know, additional inventory or additional options for the traveler are growing the pie. and it's creating new ways for people to stay. And, you know, I think that it's, you know, the alternative accommodation segment is new and is fast growing, or at least it's new online and is fast growing. And I just think it's giving people more choice.
And it also is less expensive, generally. Is that a safe assumption?
It depends on the type of property you're looking at, and it depends on the location. I think there's significant differences between a whole home rental, you know, an empty apartment rental, and a homestay rental where it's, you know, one room in someone's home. So yeah. I think probably the homestay option is less expensive than many of the others we've looked. It's probably at the same price point as a two-star hotel. Mm-hmm. But it just gives you a different experience.
Yeah, now, you know, I'm so used to the traditional option of staying at the hotel. Am I going to feel as comfortable in somebody's private home as I would feel in my private room at a hotel?
So I think what we've seen, and it's based on the reviews, I mean, this is our customers giving us the feedback.
Yeah.
You know, 95% of the reviews we get on the platform are rated 4 or 5 star out of 5. And in each and every case, it's always the homeowner who's credited, because I think it attracts a certain type of guest and a certain type of host, and it really becomes a people-centric travel experience, and that's what people take away and take home. So it seems to be the case, driven by customer data and customer feedback, that the experience really is a memorable one.
Yeah, and as we pointed out, I think another nice part of that is that we really are able to communicate even before we get there with the people we're likely to be staying with, which means that I can see whether I think I'm going to be comfortable with them, and the host can then determine whether they're going to be comfortable with me. I mean, everybody wins in that situation, right?
Yeah, and, you know, we think about us becoming, and the homestay platform becoming, almost an experience-centric travel platform.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're traveling to, you know, I know you've got family relations in Ireland, but if you were to travel to Ireland and you wanted to stay with, I don't know if you play golf.
I do.
You know, a golf enthusiast, then you know, our goal and ambition is to really make that possible, so that you go to a homestay, you look at the hosts, you find a golf enthusiast, and then, you know, there's conversation ready-made right there.
Right, and they drive you over because they know where it is, and you got somebody right there who knows their way around on the right side of the road, right? I love it.
Exactly, and then the interests are endless. You know, people who love fishing, people who love walking, people who love cycling, all of the above.
Alan, tell me to reach you out. Where can people reach out to you again, please, very quickly?
So if you check out www.homestay.com, that's HOMESTAY.com, and welcome to the world of homestays.
Hey, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Thanks for being with me. I'll check in with you again to see how things are going. Have a great day, Alan. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
Safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired October 2016.
You know, my youngest, 24-year-old, just took a job with a company up in New York, a finance company, very well known and respected. And he's been there for a couple of months, or now 3 or 4 months. And, of course, he's looking for that raise. He's entry-level salary. He wants to make a lot more money, as do all of us, whether you are millennial or you are an older employee, wherever. The idea is to get in and then to grow in that place. What's the likelihood of that? And Kate Smith, senior editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance, has been looking into this. I went to the website and I read through her article, and I've asked her to join us on the show to tell you what the trend is. If you're counting on a raise this year or 2017, what is the likelihood of it? And welcome to Home and Family Finance, first of all.
Oh, thank you.
And I noted that you spoke with Sandra McClellan, the North American Compensation Practice Leader for consulting firm Willis Towers Watson. Didn't know anybody like that existed. What did you learn, Ann?
Oh, sure. They're a big company, and they survey A lot of employers, about 1,000 employers each year, to find out what their compensation plans and what their budget is for compensation. And the good news is that almost all of the companies plan to hand out a raise next year in 2017.
Wow.
That's the good news, 98%. The, the amount, I don't know whether people will think is good, bad, or indifferent news, but the amount is going to average 3%. And that's about what companies have paid for the last several years, at least the last three. So that's about average. That's what people can expect to receive.
Well, isn't that the old saying, any raise is a good raise? I mean, at least you're making a little bit more, maybe not as much as you'd think. And what determines how much money? Is it the state of the economy? What are they saying?
Yes, all of that. But here's the other thing. You got to put it in context. Any raise is a good raise. And 3%, it sounds low. But guess what? Inflation is only 1.5%. Food costs are lower, energy costs are lower, rents, believe it or not, are peaking in some of these cities where rents were just sky high. So 3% might be better than it sounds for some people, and it does depend on what's happening in the economy, and of course it's industry specific, but we're getting down to a full employment rate economy. Unemployment is about 5%. That's almost at the level. That kind of unemployment is attracting a lot of people who had been discouraged for a long time back into the job market. So there's a little bit of slack there. But companies are starting to see shortages for the best people.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means to you is if you're one of the top performers there, you can call more of the shots. And let me just say this about that 3% average. There's a wide range between the top performers and the bottom performers. If you're rated a top performer at your company, you can expect something more along the lines of 5% on average. And if you rank in that bottom percentile, you're going to get less than 1%.
So performance matters. I mean, you've got to, if you're producing, you're likely to be compensated for it.
Exactly. And that 3% average applies to your salary, but companies also hand out annual bonuses, and that is a surprisingly hefty figure. On average, almost 12%, 11.6% annual bonuses. And then companies also hand out money for specific projects. You complete a big project or make a big sale or whatever, that kind of bonus, that one-time achievement bonus, is about 5.6%, almost 6%.
And does it make any difference whether you are a new employee or an older employee? If you just happen to be on the right project, it could pay off for you, I guess.
Exactly. And you have to have the right skills. And as you can imagine, the right skills are what everybody thinks they are. They're digital and technical, those kinds of skills. But when I talk to employers, they also say what they value a lot, especially in millennials, like your son.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciate the soft skills. If you've got the technological know-how, but you also know how to read and write and speak to people, then you're golden.
Well, you know what? It's interesting, Ann, because my son said to me, he was an English major, and he said to me after he took this job, and he's working with one of these very, very respected financial companies out of Philadelphia, and I can't think of the name of it at the moment, but he said to me, Dad, I wish you had pushed me more to deal with computer security, all of that technical stuff, digital stuff and cyber. He says, because I could walk through the door with so easily had I had that skill. And I think that's important for other young people to hear that are in schools, that they may not like it, but that's what companies are looking for, right?
Well, because those skills, people think of tech jobs as tech only jobs, but it turns out that the tech is important to almost all jobs. If you're a marketing major, you need to be tech savvy and digital savvy. You need to, these technological skills, spill over into almost every job description that you can imagine.
Wow. Well, it's just, it's fascinating. And when we come back, I want to talk about what workers can do to improve their standing. Obviously, what they learn in school will work toward them if it's in terms of the technological and the digital. But we'll find out more from Ann about what she thinks will be helpful. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network, and we thank you for being with us. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And Kate Smith, a senior editor at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. She brings Wall Street to Main Street, covering investments and personal finance for real people trying to navigate the fast-changing markets and to preserve financial security or to plan for the future. She edits the magazine's Forward Looking Ahead section and writes the Your Mind and Your Money column, and we're very pleased to have her talking about what she has recently written on counting on a raise this year, trends that you need to know, and what are the things that we can do or should do to help ourselves.
Well, one of the things that's happening is companies are moving away from this once a year you get a performance review and that followed by a raise schedule. They're really moving more towards this personalized schedule mm-hmm. of feedback. So you might not get a raise every year, but when you do get a raise, it will maybe more fairly reflect your performance, and it might be more significant because it comes less often. But the thing to remember, the important thing, is that you need to make sure that you are absolutely clear and on the same page with your manager about what's expected.
Mm-hmm.
What are the goals? How are you expected to meet them? You need to know how you're going to be measured in terms of whether you've been successful or not. So everybody's on the same page with the same markers and the same metrics. And that puts a little more of the responsibility on the employee's shoulders. It's a lot more of a proactive kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and I presume that, as you say, you need to ask those questions so that you know what your employer does expect from you, and then to meet those goals, because then you have something to aim at. And right, you say, okay, I know specifically what they want. Now, do I just do that, or do I try to work beyond that to improve my standing?
Oh, well, both.
Okay.
Yeah. You meet the standard. With the metrics that have been spelled out, but yeah, absolutely, take on as much other responsibility as you can. And companies, here's another thing: companies are more amenable to working with you to expand your own horizons. Like I said, the labor market is starting to get a little bit tighter,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
so that. Companies want to keep you if you're a good worker, and one of the things that you negotiate along with your raise are opportunities,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's education or training or the ability to get on a project that you really want to work on. Those are things
right.
that will advance your own career, and there's also people shouldn't forget that there's other things that they might want to negotiate for
mm-hmm.
Besides money, flexible schedule.
Right. Okay. Can I work from home, for instance?
Working from home. I'll tell you, I live 12 miles from my office, and it usually takes me over an hour to get here.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it when I can work at home. It gives me,
It gives
more hours in the day.
And are you thought less of if you say, look, I'd like to work from home? I mean, does an employer think, well, this guy doesn't or this gal really doesn't want to work so much? I don't think so anymore. I mean, it's kind of like an accepted possibility, isn't it?
Well, that's where you have to be very clear on the metrics
okay.
that you're going to be measured by. If
okay.
it's not FaceTime in the office, you have to make sure that your boss knows or your manager knows what you're accomplishing, what you're working on. You have to be very transparent. I'm going to be working on this. This is how far I've gotten on it. Here's how I'll update you along the way.
My guest is an expert on so much about this, and I want you to hear this part. Because my son, oh, by the way, it's Vanguard Financials. That's what I was trying
to say. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Vanguard.
That's awesome.
That's where he is, and they hired him. So he's very, very excited about it. Now, but you know what? One of the things I had to talk with him about and others is that they kind of have a different dress code. You know, he watched me. I'm a suit and tie every day of his little life. They think that's so unnecessary. But
oh, it's Vanguard Casual. That's interesting.
Well, the Vanguard is they seem to be more casual, but not as casual as he wants to be. So he has to meet their standard. That's important, isn't it, Ann?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You, especially for a 24-year-old in his first job, he wants to look the part and look professional.
Yeah, and that's that's exactly what I said to him. I said, there may come a time after you've been there a while that you can not be as look as professional as I think you should do. You know, I think some of the millennials seem to feel that's old hat. But again, as you say, what are the metrics? What are they expecting? What are the optics that they want to see? And you've got to meet those things, right? You have to meet them.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, I'm even surprised when you tell me that Vanguard is dressed down casual. So,
they're not so dressed down.
I mean,
well, he has to wear a jacket and a shirt. He doesn't necessarily have to have a tie on all the time.
Doesn't have to have a tie.
Yeah, but you know what? As I said to Paul, they'd appreciate a tie. You know, it's not something that – because whether you like it or not, these are the things that people remember. But his point to me was this. The people that he works for are rather sometimes casual themselves. I don't mean, you know, blue jeans, but I mean they're not tight. They're not uptight, you know.
Yeah,
but
well, that's great. That's a terrific company. What a great first job.
Yeah, I think so. We're very proud of them. Let's talk about the tightness of the job market. Our wages reflect. Okay, I've got just a minute to talk about that here, and then I want to get into the last segment if you can stick around for a little bit. But do wages reflect a tight job market? Is that what we're looking at?
They're starting to.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a little bit of slack in the labor market. People who have been discouraged are coming back in, and that'll keep a lid on wages rising to, too much in the short term. But companies are starting to feel the pinch.
Feel the pinch of it, yeah. All right, when I come back, I want to get to the next, because I like a couple of things, you know, which industries will be the most generous and what jobs are in demand. We're talking with a lady that knows exactly what she's talking about, and we're so pleased to have her. And Kate Smith from Kiplinger, and it's about the job market, folks. It's about the raise. Stick around.
This broadcast of Home and Family Finance originally aired October 2016.
You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network. We're very pleased to have you with us as we explore with a lady that knows a thing or two about this, what's happening on the what are the trends, as you will, if you will, in the marketplace today. As we get through the election, things are going to – and let me ask you that. And Kate Smith is my guest, senior editor at Kiplinger. Once we know which direction we're headed in, what I mean by that is once the election has been determined and we get back to regular life and not where we are today how important is that for in terms of the market settling down and one having a better idea of what's happening in their company?
Oh, it'll be huge. I think we can see it in the stock market that's just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth without really much of a clear direction. Everything is on hold until the enormous uncertainty of this election season is straightened out. And then we're going to start to see what's what with corporate spending, whether they're, you know, going to spend on compensation and wages, whether they have to, whether they're going to start, and this is important for the economy and the stock market overall, whether they're going to start spending on capital equipment and and things to, if workers are becoming scarce, companies are going to have to start spending on equipment to make each employee more efficient. And, you know, that's a big deal for economic growth. And, but companies have just been sitting on these big piles of cash. Debt levels have come up a little bit, but are still quite reasonable. But everything seems to be on hold. And a lot of it is just this uncertainty that, you know, over all of us.
Right. and it is over all of us. And so if I'm out there and I've got a job and, you know, I don't know whether I'm going to get a raise or not. Maybe I will. What can I do, if anything? I mean, we talked about, you know, the importance of meeting the metrics as it comes up regarding the job you're in. But you shouldn't be afraid, I suppose, to go and make sure that that your boss knows that you want to meet those, that you are interested, that you are interested. In other words, you ought to be putting forth a very clear expression at your job that you care about your job and what you're doing.
Yes. And like I said, companies are getting away from this, you know, this formal performance review followed by a raise. So it's, and this is another reason why the communication skills are so important, is because you can't just sit there and wait for November to roll around for somebody to fill out a form on how you're doing your job. Mm-hmm. You've got to communicate with your manager on a regular year-round schedule. And if your manager isn't scheduling those meetings, you've got to schedule them.
Okay.
And, you know, make sure that you're communicating what you've done and what you'd like to do.
Okay. And you mentioned a few things, but the types of jobs that are in demand, you had a few thoughts on that. Can you expand on that a little bit, what you think are the types of jobs that will be in demand in 2017, 2018?
Well, again, the tech jobs are in demand. I've seen surveys from other companies that finance jobs are in demand. There's another company that surveys people that says, believe it or not, lawyers. There's been a glut of lawyers on the market for many years, but that demand there is starting to pick up for experienced lawyers, mm-hmm. people with a few years under their mm-hmm. belt. The accounting, and especially forensic accounting,
right.
Those jobs are in demand. But like I said, the English majors, like your son, they do surprisingly well. People say there's no jobs for the liberal artist, and that is a misconception.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, you might know a programming language or two, but if you can't write a proposal or communicate
right.
with your team, then you're not going to get very far.
And that's basically what he found, is that, you know, if you've got a good education, you're a good person, you show care and concern, you want to be there, all of those things count, and we both know that. Thank you so much for joining
exactly.
us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and thanks for the article.
Pleasure.
By the way, where can people see the article, please?
I'm sorry? Where can they see it?
Yeah, yeah.
They can go to Kiplinger.com.
Okay. Kiplinger.com, and you'll see it right there. You can't miss it. Okay. And Kate Smith, thanks so much for joining us.
November 2016.
Okay. Wonderful stuff. We appreciate you being with us. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Hope you'll join us then.